Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Here, right here at the beginning, just like I am all the time for everything.
Every show, like clockwork. Justin Robert Young.
Hey, what's up, folks?
And our producer, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody.
So we watched, right before, we just finished watching the Selfish Ledger video, which was a leak from a department within Google, some video they do, some internal presentation. They produce a ton of stuff like, hey, let's think about this. Let's think about this topic. By no means are these things like shown in the boardroom of like, now this is our master plan. Yeah. You have a massive corporation, a lot of people thinking about how you can solve problems, idealistic ideas about the future, et cetera. I highly recommend you go watch The Selfish Ledger. The Verge had an article on it. They were the first ones to get hold of it, I believe. Watch it and then come back, I think, would be the best way to participate or, well, listen to us bray about this.
We'll have a link in the show notes if you can't find it.
Yeah, I highly recommend go check it out. And I wanted to kind of get I'd read about it and I had a reaction to it. Then I saw it and I had a reaction to it. Watched again, I have thoughts about this. And again, I need to emphasize that if you watch this, whatever your reaction is, understand this is not necessary. We don't know what it is. We know that inside Google, this is a video that was produced. Some people thought about, hey, these are some thoughts. This is the way we see the future could be. It's not necessarily Google's mantra or not necessarily not. So.
For those who are listening right now but acknowledge that they're not going to go out and watch this, what would be a good way to kind of summarize what we saw?
I think everybody has their own reaction.
Yeah.
It basically asks what would happen if we allowed
total data collection,
data transparency, right? Like you exist with some amount of patterns of behavior and some amount of genetic code. They table the genetic code part, but they say, what if we knew all your patterns of behavior and then use that to shape, just as a gene, essentially hijacks a free ride through multiple bodies over years and years and years. What if your pattern of behavior was the actual free rider through your life? Can we just appeal straight to your, as they put it, ledger?
And the hypotheticals that they suppose are, well, what if you told your phone how some area you wanted to be better about and your phone would give you suggestions as you use your phone to say, hey, why don't you try this eco-friendly option?
Sure, or maybe you're like, hey, phone, I want to lose 5 pounds. And the phone realizes, well, from your pattern of behavior, I bet if you had a Hulk-themed set of dumbbells, that would perform 15% better than a Thor-themed set of dumbbells. Sure. So we'll just real quick create a one-time offer for you based on how much money I already know that you make. We're going to make these Hulk-themed dumbbells that we estimate will cause you to build 2.3% more muscle mass, and they will cost you what we believe is an affordable amount based on your income, which we also know because we're Google.
Well, and more than making bespoke products, making bespoke data entry points for this machine to find out about your weight.
The overarching idea is they want to use, let's collect all this data, let Google help use this data to help improve the world by helping you improve by reaching. And they'd use the phrase... This was their phrase, Google's values that Google considers important. They did say that, which was sort of, I'm going to say baseline, let's all agree data can make the world better. Data can help us make better choices, right?
Certainly so. Yeah.
We're all pro AI. We're all pro computers here, right?
Sure.
So it's not going to be a, man, the computer is trying to think. I thought that the connection to Lamarckism was torturous at best. And then the use of the selfish gene, one of my favorite books ever, the selfish ledger to sort of like you know, then then there should be the selfish genome, which kind of the analogy to me, I'm like, nobody cares. But I'm like, that's really not a good analogy, because the ledger's the whole collection, and the book, The Selfish Gene, is about the gene. And like, you're making this sound sciencey.
Forgive me, Andrew. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that everything you've said so far, not the beef most people have with this.
True. No, I agree. But I'm saying, from the start, this is where it starts from. We're going to use this thing called the reason we should self-religion, because Richard Dawkins wrote this book about Hamilton's work and da-da-da. Great, sounds science-y. And then I'm like, no, you got the science wrong. Are you explaining it? It doesn't quite fit your metaphor. Where is this going to go from here? Because already we're on the wrong track. And then it goes, to me, downhill really fast. And the term Google values, because they pop up, is I didn't hear the Google values thing the first time through, but they show like, here are these things that you can choose, like be healthy. I'm like, everyone's be healthy. That sounds great. Now we have the problem that a lot of search indexes will show you what the popular choice for something being healthy is, or they'll say, we'll go to this authority like the FDA, right? They wouldn't give us bad information about salt or fat or anything. Okay, we'll forget about that. There's a data problem there, which can be solved by better questions. They have the environmental thing, which, man, that you know, let's no nuclear, let's do solar wind, then great, we're still going to need petrochemical. That's more, we don't quite know what the answer is. And the last one is like, I want to buy local or eat local, because there's this belief that that's better for the environment, when there is a lot of evidence to say it is the opposite effect. It increases environmental impact, it's less fuel efficient or less energy efficient, and may not be as healthy. And I'm like, man, these values you have, you just assume that everybody is on board with, maybe are problematic to begin with, but we're already assuming, we're all like, yeah, we all agree these things are right. And I'm like, I don't know.
Sorry, forgive me. If we can dial back a bit, it seems like we got a little bit all over the map very, very quickly. It sounded like you were referring to what appear to be Google's core values, and you're questioning whether or not they're—
In this demo, for those who did not see it, you take all this data, and then you can say, for the cost, the simple cost of allowing all of your data, not just stuff that runs through Google, not just stuff that you would flip on a switch not just the pixels that pick up all your data traffic and everything and feed it back to these companies. You say, everything I am doing on my phone, with the phone being recognized as this great catch-all point for us creating our own a definable set of data points, that then, as it learns more about us, and theoretically, we could have our genetic history be transferred through these data points of our parents that are using these things and then pass it on to our kids, that we are now effectively able to get this application. I want to lose weight. I want to have support local businesses. I want to protect the environment. And that, I think, is where Andrew is saying the leap comes in, that now Google is deciding, okay, well, here are values that we can all agree are good for mind, body, and community, that might have dubious issues tied to
perverse
that.
Consequences.
Yeah.
Okay. So to me, I do agree that it's a little bit sloppy on, you know, Lamarckian science is a weird peg to hang all of this on, since it was so thoroughly disproven. And in fact, it was, I want to say, was it the Soviets that embraced Lamarckian?
Lysenkoism, yeah.
Oh, Lysenkoism, yeah, right? Not great associations with Lamarckian theories of evolution.
And status, totalitarian states.
All of that, neither here nor there, so that's fine. Poetically, I was on board, where it's like, okay, well, but poetically, is there a lesson to be learned? And they threw in the word epigenetics, which I don't know exactly refers, but to me, the part that made me pause was, and I don't think they flat out ask this question, but they should. The question is, let's say it is possible for an algorithm to watch everything you do and essentially not deconstruct, not reveal as if it's a hidden secret that nobody knew and then suddenly they figured it out, but label what it is you do and how you tend to react to certain things. Now, if it was another human, we would label this as a lovely person who, quote unquote, gets us, right? We love it when another person can predict what it is, how it is we're going to react, because then that other person can surprise and delight us by saying, oh, well, I told you this because I knew otherwise you wouldn't get the surprise. And I know you love surprise birthday parties. So it finally happened. You got a surprise birthday party. And we think that's delightful. What changes when it's not a person, but a system or a team or a global corporation? Andrew?
I have my hand up.
Okay.
I have my hand up. It's back to incentives. Brian, would you rather have you and your accountant do your taxes or the IRS do your taxes?
Oh, that's interesting.
For me, I'm all for. I love the idea of an AI doing this. Love the idea of doing an AI doing this. One that I own, one that I know its first and primary customer responsibility is to me, and I assume, and there can be other incentives there, when it's this third party that has, and any third party to an extent, you're going to have, you know, if you upset Google and you lose your Google account, you're kind of effed, you know? And the idea of this third party, which I know what its incentives are. They've made it very clear. We've watched Google's incentives as they've evolved as a marketing company, a company that does this sort of stuff. You know, that, like we said, they got rid of the do no evil because, you know, hey, we're building, you know, technology for the Defense Department for robots and stuff, but it's not involved in killing people. And it's like, I personally have no problem with that. But if I have this do no evil approach, like, that's debatable. So my issue is not with a third party or robot or whatever. There are companies that I trust more than other companies. No company I trust completely. I trust Apple a lot with my data privacy. I trust Apple a lot. Apple will make a really crappy advertising product like iAds because they don't want to be creepy about data, right? Because they make so much money in buying the device. Google's not a company that I feel good about that. And also, but I don't feel comfortable with Apple handling me trying to make moral or ethical choices because I think that I love Apple, but Apple will come out against, you know, some state, you know, like I'm all for, you know, I think anybody should be able to get married, should be able to marry. Apple will come out against a state that has an opposite approach towards that. Great. And they will say nothing about what goes on in other countries that have draconian policies because it's bad business. And that's, I get that, but you're making business decisions. You pretend to have these ethical viewpoints, but when there's an economic cost to them, it's too high. You bow, you take in, you know, you just sort of cave, and that's, I'm aware of this, you know? So that's my point, is that, like, I'm not completely happy to turn over all my ethics to them or my life choices to them, because I think they make choices that are inconsistent and hypocritical.
Well, I think that there is one other question to be asked here. And that is something that I think is becoming more and more of maybe the most, like, mainstream larger tech argument, that is kind of breaking itself into a larger audience. Who owns your data? And what do you do about it? How much should you be able to always export? And what applications does it have beyond just serving the master that generated it, right? Like, how much should I be able to, if Facebook is able to run a tremendous company based on using the data of me and my friends to sell to advertisers, should there be a button where I can export that and port it into something else where I can do something else with it? And so that's where I think this idea is interesting. I don't quite know if the idea of greater data surrender, I mean, to me, in hindsight now, we've talked about it a little bit, all the floopy science talk and the French chapter headings, which if you are, you know, have watched it, you know, each chapter of this idea, this essay, has its own, you know, kind of high-minded idea. It seems like a very flowery version of, so we'll be able to do more if you just give us more data. We'll be able to know more if you just give us more
Unus
data.
Pro omnibus.
Or, yeah, or maybe it's Latin or whatever, right? So, like, it's a simpler idea than I think they
the
wanted.
The quill of Cornelius Fudge.
Yeah, exactly.
These are not jokes. I'm just like, reading the chapters.
It's like, okay, we get it, man. You went to college. On the other hand, it's like, just okay, if you had more data and you got more data faster, you could do different things with it.
Il grillo parlante.
Right? Oh my God. I remember I took a first date to Il Grillo Parlante. It was fantastic.
Well, so what is it about this that makes us feel so oogie? Is it the fact that it's a corporation doing it and not a government entity? Is it the fact that it's anything but an academic institution? Is it a fact that we can understand the dollar motive at the end?
I think it's two things. In terms of a mainstream audience, we love technology, but many times we are consistently freaked out the more we find out exactly how much data we generate and how that data is used. It is a rinse and repeat cycle on Daily Tech News Show. Whenever there's big mainstream coverage of stuff, and you could look no further than everything that happened with Facebook, that in general, the more you could just write Facebook and Google's business model and put a salacious headline on top of it, and it would read like an expose that people are like, oh my God, they collect your data. And did you know, controversial plan, Facebook offers an easy way for every website you go to track your movements, even when you're not on Facebook. And that's Facebook Pixel. It is a cornerstone of what we understand as the modern advertising ecosystem, but people are freaked out by it. They are very weirded out by how much we are tracked on our daily basis, and they don't know about it. I mean, there's a lot of willful ignorance as we enter into our adolescence of modern technology.
My issue kind of comes from this is severalfold, is the idea of a monolithic organization that's almost Leviathan in sort of the classical sense, the all-powerful thing, determining our values, determining these are what the values we should share are. I have a problem with that because I think that there is no right answer to many of these questions. There's 7 billion people pursuing their own self-interest and things working out overall. But the idea of the classical sort of like, once we have all the information, we can figure out how to make the world better. Well, I don't know that we're going to reach a world that we all think is the perfect world. And it's disconcerting because anytime you get a group of smart people together, they're like, I think if we were in charge, we could figure these things out. And that to me is scary.
So there's two comments that appear to be at odds in the chat right now, and they express two very different opinions. And I would love to explore the difference between them. One of them is Zelo_S says, I don't want anybody doing it. And by doing it, he means logging what people do. Like, and I think that speaks to this deep-seated desire many of us have to believe that we are homunculi, that we are the ghosts in the machine, that we are above our corporeal form, that we're not just crude matter undergoing chemical and psychological processes with predictable outcomes. We want to believe that we are, in the libertarian sense, in charge of our own destinies. And the more, whether it's an AI, whether it's a team of spies working for the KGB, whether it's a significant other, the more they can figure out what our algorithms are, the less we feel like autonomous beings. And then on the flip side, we have Ill_Inc saying, my data is not my own. My body is not my own. My mind is not my own, which is the flip side, which is we're just feedback loops existing in this weird soupy meat space. And we act in predictable ways. And we don't own the carbon atoms in our body. We don't own the exclusive rights to know what we did and did not do, because everything we do has an impact on the world around us. And I think both of them are extreme and distasteful to me, but where do you divide that line?
The lines will be arbitrary. That's the first thing you have to, like, what you own and who you are is an arbitrary definition. And you kind of come to this fuzzy sort of area of like, yeah, we generally agree this is like intellectual property, other things. There is no abstract law of the universe that has any concept of what this is. And we say, we think this works best. And then other people are like, no, we don't. Let's change this. When it comes to what you own or what, you know, the whole idea of, you know, free will is an interesting thing because we keep moving the goalpost. It used to be, does God control who we are? And then when we said, you know what, like there's some problematic ideas there, then what's the point of being a person if God controls all our actions? Then it's like, okay, God gives us a choice. And then we got, once we had sort of classical physics, we're like, yeah, but does the universe sort of determine, are we sort of clockwork set in motion? And so free will went from, are we controlled by God or gods, to, are we then free will, are we determined by our universe around us? And then once classical physics sort of found its sort of the edge of its boundary, we realized that there's an entirely bigger set of rules that say that, no, you cannot predict these sorts of things. We got, okay, but are there these internal things inside of us predictable, or are these systems sort of determinable? And it's like, we keep moving the goalpost there. And I'm kind of like, I think, like, I don't care what moves the puppet. Once we cut the strings, that's fine. The puppet, there are things inside the puppet that work inside the puppet, you know, and that free will, I'll call that free will, whatever the puppet's doing, because we got rid of the strings of the God. We know the universe isn't determined. There's enough randoms there. That being said, the question, who owns your data? Listen, what I observe, I own. If I observe these things, or I have the opportunity to use these things, I can read it. You know, that gets into this fuzzy area. That's how I'll define it. But the idea that we don't own anything, like, I mean, that can be, somebody can say that, but then it can say, how does the world function with that? How do we make use of it? I don't know. We come up with an arbitrary definition that gives us the best results.
I don't know what the middle ground is, because, like, you dropped an interesting statement, which is, I observe the things, or I own the things I observe. If you own them, then they're
my
yours.
My observations.
Sure, your observations. But by that logic, if you own them, then they're yours to resell. Because you know for a fact you saw Brian Brushwood right now on the After Things podcast. That is yours, and you own it because you saw it and it's live. And CNN calls you and they're like, hey, we need to find out the truth of whether or not Brian appeared on Weird Things at this time. We would like to pay you $50. Will you personally verify that he was on the After Things podcast? So I think you're right. You do own it. But then a side effect of that is, how comfortable are we with autonomous beings? And if I own the camera that logged the entry of this guy who showed up at this place at that time, do I own the fact that that person was there at that time? And is it mine to resell to another entity? And I think by the letter of the law, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Maybe by the spirit.
Yeah. I mean, you can, you get the fuzzy areas get into, like, okay, you remembered every single thing Brian said. Would you write a transcript of what Brian said? And that's where law has to say, like, nah, that's you're taking too much of Brian's property. But I can summarize it. I can do a lot of things with that, and I can and do that. And so, yeah, if I use the web, I have like, I've made this before. Like, I don't think we should pass a law to change how Google or Facebook functions. As creepy as I am by them, as creeped out as I am by how they use the data, what they do with it, they have the right to do this. I have not logged on Facebook this year because, to me, it's too much for me. But I would fight a law to stop them. I would fight a law to stop them from doing what they do. Even though I don't like what they do, I don't like the way it's done. The Google selfish ledger, like, I think is creepy. It's invasive. I'm freaked out. Like, what happens when you're? What's the Chinese version of this? You know, what's the Chinese version of this, where you've got to make the government happy, meaning the central party happy, meaning Z happy, meaning a totalitarian state happy, you know? Or what's the version if we change our laws in our own country to this thing? I don't know. That being said, if Google wants to build this, I wouldn't put a law in place to stop them. I would oppose a law to stop them, because I think everybody should have that choice to make for them. And I think many people share those values and they want to have that right to do that. But I'm just telling you, me, creeped out, not for me. I want an alternative.
Well, and I think that's the idea of a phone scraped data collection is interesting. Just like I think us being able to export our data from these services for which we have created tremendous value is something that we should be looking to do more of. But also, we do need our own way to synthesize it. And well, I think that's where, to me, there's a lot of room to grow.
Two things. Like, one, like, OpenBIOS is trying to already does this. Their citizen credit thing is an early implementation of this, and that is a scary conversation unto itself. Justin, to your point to who owns the data, I don't think I own the data Google's collected on me, because Google, maybe they've spent a considerable amount of money building a profile of me. There's a lot more about it, whatever. I don't own that. I don't think I own that. I can be creeped out and say, I won't deal with you guys unless you give transparency to it. But end of the day, if somebody has a profile on me, somebody's done their own research on me, whatever, they own it. I
don't think that you should force them to offer up your data. But, you know, in the same way that Twitter now has an export tool that you can get all the tweets that you've ever tweeted, right? And you can export that into a spreadsheet. There is some layer of stuff that I would like to see. And I think that if there are ways that I can use that they don't have to give me their model, but they can, you know, if there is raw data that could be given that I could then synthesize through another service, I would like it.
Sure. I understand it. But I say that a part of the issue too is that one of the things that you can pull up your Google, like a certain amount of Google data, and Facebook says, here's the data, but it's kind of BS, because a big part of what they do is, you know, they will use face matching in your photos to see who your friend network is. Yeah. So there's an entire different data set that says, you know, we know your friends with Brian, we know your friends with these persons. So we know if we put an ad to you and an ad to this person within a 24-hour period, it has a multiplier effect. They're never going to tell you that data set, because that's proprietary data. Their ability, a lot of what they know about you, they will not tell you, because it's not like they need to put microphones in your home. They can take your publicly available data you gave them and generate entirely new data sets, you know, of which they're not going to share. And that's, yeah. So to me, it's, you know, that's that whole other issue. It's like,
well, and that's the flip side, right? Is like, whether it's an individual or a corporate entity, aren't they entitled to their own private thoughts? Like,
agreed.
Like, for example, if what they're thinking is, I'm pretty sure, you know, hey, we've just been publicly given the subjects of next week's Weird Things podcast. My private thought is that Brian and Andrew are going to fight about this one issue. Like, are they obligated to share that with everybody, or are they? Do they have the freedom to say, after watching Brian and Andrew in 200 previous episodes of the show, we think they're going to fight, and as a result, let's make sure to run this carbon fiber ad right before it, because that will play into the argument one way or the other. Like, it seems like they should be entitled to that, right?
I agree. I 100% agree. And that's to me the scary part. And when Andrew says scary, does not mean therefore we need laws to protect us.
Right.
Andrew means scary means just be aware of that. They can take a data set, all of the stuff that everything we've clicked on there, and say, yeah, now here's all the data we have on you. Like, well, no, that's not true, because you can take that data and you can put it against a model of somebody else and you can know more about me.
Well, there's what hard data they have, and then there's what extrapolations they make from the data, mm-hmm. right?
And then the data between you and everybody, like, oh, here are your five friends. Well, what happens when I don't have access to your data, Brian, or Justin's data, but I bet you if you put our three data sets together, you would see a lot of emergent patterns and things like that would be very, very, that would make us go, oh, wow, we're never going to get that. And it's not their responsibility to give it to us. So me, it's like, yeah, it'd be nice, but I'm not going to get, you know, it's, you know, we don't even get transparency in our own government about tell us what you know. So.
Well, so we've been talking a little bit on the individual and the micro level, but how do you guys feel about the idea of Google basically installing a macro level layer on human civilization?
That's one of the weird parts that sort of short circuits my intellectual interior debate about the right and wrong of it. Because yes, it's creepy that Google's going to use this to make a profit. It's creepy that, you know, somebody might feel invaded upon and so on. But on the flip side, if I back out 1,000 years and ask the general question, is it bad that humans divert billions of dollars of resources to finding out how and why humans think what they think? It kind of seems noble. Seems like that's stuff we should know.
But
I'm all for using AI and stuff to address questions. My problem is that in society today, among people who are leaders and people who are innovators, there is a complete lack, there is often very much a lack of, wait, is this really the right solution? Is this the right solution? There is this, yeah, we love this, let's go do this. Like, wait, let's question this. And that was my problem, is the three examples I go, they went from a little bit, kind of a lot, like, no, this is really debatable, but and that's the problem we run into a lot in government, corporate, whatever sort of levels, is you get a groupthink that comes in like, yeah, we all want this, right? And you're like, no, we don't know that that's really the right way. Like, no, of course. And that's, let's ask the deep questions of, you know, if I felt confident that we were really asking, like, how do we solve, what are the problems? And because we don't even ask, like, what are the problems before we've tried to figure out solutions to them.
Well, and so this comes back to the disagreement between, or the fundamental disconnect between diagnosis and prescription, right? So mm-hmm. on the one hand, I applaud that they are diagnosing the human condition and that they are figuring out why we make the decisions that we make. I will absolutely cede your point that the prescription is to, now we can take care of, take advantage of people's insecurities and sell them a scale that is exactly designed to appeal to their personal aesthetic at their lowest emotional point.
I love, like, Google, which is now Alphabet. They own a company called Calico, which is like California Life Sciences, which is working on trying to find cures for disease, life extension, all, love that. They're using machine intelligence and stuff. I think it's wonderful. And part of the reason I love it is they can take a specific problem that I, as an individual, can say, yeah, I would like to live longer. And other people are like, no, I don't believe in living longer. I'm like, great. You don't have to do that thing. If your problem is me living longer, we're going to be forever having a dispute. Well, no, we won't, because you'll die. And if I have the benefit from it, then, you know, the point is like, I love that. Let's ask these specific questions. And then we got to figure out, like, you know, some of those convoluted things you'll ever hear sometimes are from science ethicists, because they'll sometimes realize, like, man, these people are very opinionated about, well, how they think things should be. And some of these things, got to let the world decide. You got to let the market decide. So I'm excited about the potential for these technologies in addressing specific asking questions about stuff. I'm less excited when they're saying, and therefore you need to do this, or therefore, because when they're like, Google's values. Like, I'm creeped out by your values, guys. I'm very creeped out. So I'm not excited about a system where the most powerful, you know, search engine in the world and data collection organization in the world and the biggest marketing company in the world is now determining values. That's scary.
What if they had Latin chapter titles?
But also, like, only occasionally Latin. Sometimes they're like vaguely French.
Yeah.
Or maybe it looked like they came from English literature.
Yeah.
Also, what if the entire presentation was made of clip art that they bought from Bond 5?
Yeah.
Yeah. But let me just say that, like, Brian brought up a very good point early on where, I mean, I was taught about, like, I was going sequentially what frustrated me, like the selfish ledger, and then, like, you know, talking about Lamarckism, and then in the Soviet, Lysenko was a, I would call him a scientist, but he's not really a formally trained scientist, who thought, like, if we want to have wheat that can, like, survive, like, you know, in, you know, cold winters, let's just take a bunch of wheat and, like, cool it, make it very, very, very cold, you know, and then we'll plant it and it should be stronger. Not see which wheat survives and take this the offshoot children from that. He was really a believer that, like, if you keep cutting mouse tails, eventually the mice will be born with short tails. There is tiny little things to deal with in epigenetics, like surface myelation of DNA. There is a tiny factor, but that's not really how you get to where you want to get to overall. And it was a flawed idea, but the state believed if you want to increase the agricultural growth of what we're trying to do, we know, everybody knows this is what we want to do. And Lysenko was taught in Soviet schools. Everybody knew this is how you do it in Soviet schools. And it was wrong. It was wrong, and it crippled their agricultural production and caused massive famines. And that was a scary thing. You watch this video, we're like, well, we all know we want to buy local, right? Right? We want to buy local, right? It's like, sometimes.
Yeah. Man, I don't even want to open that can of worms, but I certainly agree that let me put it this way. There are a number of social experiments where people are put in charge of virtual cities. Imagine SimCity or whatever, with its own set of game-based rules. And beforehand, people are asked, hey, do you know how societies work? Well, what's your theory? They're like, oh, I'm a libertarian. Oh, I'm a socialist. I'm this, that. It's clear that if the state just ran this, or if it's clear if the people just left it up to whatever, what they figured out was the more preconceived notions anybody had going in to take charge of a system, on no matter what those preconceived notions were, as long as you had strong opinions going into it, that was a strong indicator that you were going to be a very bad mayor of this system. The best people go in saying, well, I don't know, I feel this, but you know, let's just see what we got. And they paid extreme attention to the data as it came in, so they were able to make small corrections early on without judgment, without feeling threatened that their belief was not the right belief or whatever. And those are the people who are good stewards of those cities or whatever. So I definitely resonate with your Oogie vibe that and for all I know, this is some mid-level, you know, presenter saying, what are things I'd imagine everybody would agree with? You know, buy local, eat more healthy, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Larry Page and Sergio, they're not petting white cats somewhere going, ah, they figured it out. Ah, destroy the plan. We'll have to come up with a new one.
No, but there are
– although there is the argument that this is a pitch video, right? Like if – either for, you know, at its most specific a product, and at its most broad a general direction for which products can be developed toward. And if the person who made it is like, well, here are things that I know resonate, like there is a thought there that like, okay, well, this is what the crowd that you're playing to, and the crowd that you're playing to are people who make decisions at Google.
Well, and that's you know, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, this did not, you know, come up in a vacuum, and we've seen this before, and you know, and that, and I go back to, you know, a scary debate was, you know, like James Damore, the guy who wrote, you know, his criticism of the, you know, the gender politics and all that and racial stuff inside of Google. And this is a guy who I think approached this with a tact of a very introverted sort of engineer who may not have been very aware of how this would affect other people, whatever, but you know, this a guy said something that upset a lot of people, and maybe a lot of it was not correct or whatever kind of thing like this. And Google's reaction was, we got to fire him. We got to let him go, whatever, because they can't handle, you know, and, you know, was what he said in that memo the most disruptive thing that somebody said that day who worked for Google? I doubt it. You know, was firing the guy the right outcome for that? Maybe it was, but if you're an organization like Google who's cares very much about the appearances of doing the right thing versus, you know, saying, oh, you know what, this guy feels this way and I don't think he's right. How do we address this? We could say we could fire this person, you know, and solve the problem, because other people, you know, people who are accused of being, you know, too sensitive or too upset to go to work the next day, which was.
There's also, though, like a very weird thing that is happening right now. Like I was watching the basketball game yesterday and it felt like every other ad was either Facebook doing an apology commercial about how, hey, we started out being good and then along the way we got bad, but now we swear we're going to be good again. Or Uber and their new CEO saying, remember all the bad things you didn't like about Uber? And we became this like cultural touchstone for out of touch technology run amok. Well, now we fired that guy. And I'm a new guy, so give us another shot. Like, there is this concept of big tech apologizing and being known by their actions. Because I would say internally, when the Uber-Lyft thing became a cultural divide, the thought within Uber was, whatever. We're still doing the most rides. We're still doing the, you know, we're still growing at the appropriate scale. Focus on winning, focus on going forward. And everybody laughed. I mean, I knew people inside of Uber that would like laugh at when Lyft did their ad campaign parodying the, you know, super tech broed suited up boardroom in the gray antiseptic thing compared to the, hey, we're just a fun, funky ride sharing company. of Lyft, and now they're doing the exact same thing. So it's like there is, as much as you can look at Google's decision to fire James Damore as like, hey, they can't handle even, let's categorize it as just a bad take, right? That they can't handle a bad take circled or circulated in their email system. There is a cost these days to how we look at, you know, these companies that are kind of defining our new reality and our business titans.
And I think part of it, the frustrating thing is it's like, and I keep, and I've said this before, I Google does amazing things. Google's business model, I get it. It's a brilliant business model. There is a trade-off there. And it's unfortunate. Google can't come out and say, like you said, like, hey, this is how our business model is. It could be like, oh my God, like, no, it's been there all along. You want information, we find information, and then we sell ads to you. And some of the most important information is the things you do. And this is, they're kind of transparent about that, but if you don't plaster all over this, we want to make the world better, we want to do no evil, these are our values, if you don't do all this virtue signaling, you get criticized. Yet the reality is Google's job is to return value to its investors. It's what it should be. And those investors, not just a bunch, it's teachers' unions, it's your parents' pensions, it's this. It's to return value to investors. That's its job. If they deviate from that, they are not performing according to how those investors gave the money, and they are betraying the trust of the people who the purse promises they made to. And we have a problem with that. So as a society, we get upset when a company does the thing the company is supposed to do.
Man, I feel like we're just going to spin farther down the rabbit hole if we don't cut it off at that moment. But that is a complicated rabbit hole.
Good talk, though.
Robots, AI, helping us make better decisions, I'm all for.
Yeah.
I just want to know that its self-interest and my self-interest are mostly aligned.
Yeah.
You know, like
the part of the problem is nobody knows.
That scale we made for people. What if we start telling them they're fatties? You know, then we could start selling them diet plans.
I mean, well, and plus also, like, we don't really have a strong sense as a society of what our personal data is worth. Like if a man in a black suit and a giant suitcase said, hey, I would like to purchase all of your personal data. Here's $1 million. What is that, a slam dunk? Yes. Or is that a slam dunk? No.
Brian, I've got 48 hours of you sitting on public toilets. What's that data worth to you?
Wait. I wasn't even thinking of buying it. I was thinking of selling it. I was like, how much are you going to give me?
Well, I'm open, you know.
I mean, the funny part is we don't really have a sense of whether getting paid $1 million for everything we are is a good value or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's changed too. Is the Google's ability to turn a profit on the information they have on you is increased. That's if you look at like 10 years ago, I mean, they made something like $14 or $20 per person per year on all your data. And that was why you could never call customer support at Google. It's like by the time you spend 30 minutes on a phone call with somebody, they're losing money on you for the year. They've increased the amount of money they make per person on this, so it's going up. So now it's like something like $20 or $30. We're making like $100, $120 or something on average per person per year, you know, and so, and that, as the data has gotten better, as the data gets better, the ability to target advertising increases, keeps going up, you know. And but also, like, there is an upper limit to the advertising industry. That's the other part of it too, is there's an ultimate, there's an X amount that people being able to pay. And that's why subscription services are now starting to become the new thing. It's why, you know, Netflix is worth as much as Disney without the same amount of revenue return. But they're like, man, you know, having people buy something for you, why Amazon does Prime, all that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it's worth.
Man, heady stuff this week.
Yep. Picks? Hell yeah. Picks? Have we got picks?
Oh, man. I guess I don't. Deadpool 2. Go see it. You'll laugh.
I got a pick. I'll tell you what, boys, this pick has changed my life, and it is FREE free. I don't know what it is. This little guy, water. For whatever reason, I got it in my head the other day that I wanted to drink 8 pints of water a day. I wanted to, I felt that I was underhydrated and I needed to hydrate myself. And it might be the dumbest thing in the world, but it's the dumbest thing in the world that I feel has positively affected my mind, my focus, and my attitude. To just listen, I pee like a racehorse, but I find that appetite controls
on four legs while running.
Exactly. By breaking out of the blocks and winning the Preakness. I don't know. It's just been, it's like a wild hair that I got up my butt, and I've done it for the last couple of weeks, and I've found myself better off.
I can't speak to whether or not it's an important thing for hydration, but I can speak to aesthetically how much I enjoyed the palate cleansing that came with going the full Dr. Furman diet of eating whole plants and giving up any kind of salts or any of that stuff. It is kind of nice, the aesthetic experience that you have by defaulting back to zero and you know, really with intentionality gauging how you feel about the other stuff you put in your body.
Bryce?
Ooh.
Well, side note, I'll let you think. Okay. Justin, you got that article I sent you about how journalists are suffering from like dehydration and...
Yes, I did. It does not shock me.
Apparently,
No, there was a study where a couple journalists, I believe in England... did like full calorie or like a intake stuff, and they monitored their sleep and everything, and they were found to be a bit haggard, which any kind of deadline industry, I think you would find similar stuff. But it does put an interesting face on, you know, the news.
I have a quick pick. If you have kids, I think they might like the Who Was show on Netflix. It's a new series about historical figures played out in songs and live action sketches. And it's a cute show. And I think if you were a parent watching this with your kid, you would not blow your brains out.
Oh, cool. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So check that out. That's on Netflix, the Who Was show.
So I'd like to continue the discussion about mega corporations controlling every aspect of our lives, mm-hmm. pervasive advertising and creepiness and whatnot, but I'm not at this moment. I'm just instead, I'm going to do my pick, which is Amazon Fresh, which I brought that up. So Amazon Fresh, and it gets confusing because there's Amazon Pantry, there's Amazon, and then there's restaurants, and people are like, restaurants, what's that? I'm like, yeah, it's another thing. So Amazon Fresh is basically their grocery delivery service. And man, I'm lazy. I am really, really lazy. What I like about this is Justin brought up water. Now, I live across the street from a store, which is both good and bad.
I thought you were about to say from a lake.
Yeah, no, it's the store. It's good in that if I don't have to keep stuff in my pantry. The store is open 24 hours. I go get whatever I need. It's bad that because I don't drive my car there because it's across the street and I'd feel stupid, I don't keep enough water in the house because don't bring enough water bottles because I don't want to carry cases of water across the street. So I let that get low. But with Amazon Fresh, for a $5 tip and maybe a wave delivery charge, I can make some poor new economy freelancer cart 8 cases of water to my doorstep.
Yeah, buddy.
And have all the water I need, all the Diet Coke I need, all the whatever I need. So I've been using Amazon Fresh a lot. So,
big shout out to Amazon Fresh. I love Amazon Fresh. I use it probably 2 or 3 times a month. Prices are good. Now they have Whole Foods stuff in there. I don't know how long it's going to be around because I don't know exactly where Amazon wants to go with grocery delivery now that they own Whole Foods, but I love it and I use it all the time.
Oh, it is not going away. Maybe it'll change the name, but I think it is only going to increase because the more they get people used to doing this, the more they even solve it. It's even more efficient than having you go to the grocery store, you know? So,
yeah, from talking to a friend of mine that works with Whole Foods, post Amazon, and doing a little research myself, because I do love Amazon Fresh, they are two just different, you know, like the question is going to be exactly how they merge these two separate successful things. But I very much am excited about the future of Amazon Fresh, because I think it's right now I just have a thing that's just my every 2 weeks. I just refill the exact same cart. It's over $40. It's free delivery. Boom. You can get it the next day. Sometimes same day.
Yep. It's cool.
All right. I guess that's it. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.